The DigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Centre Show, show 179, Thursday, 30th October, 2008. Show and control from embedded automation. I'm Ian Dixon. This week on the show, I'm going to be talking to missingremote.com's Mike Garson. And this is from a live show we did a little while ago. And we took questions from the chat room. We talked TV tuners, progress of Media Center, Mike's must-have applications for Media Center, and a little bit of everything Media Center related. So it's a good chat with, and Mike's an interesting guy to talk to. So that's a good interview for you. I've also got news from the PDC, Microsoft PDC, the Professional Developer Conference, Windows 7, which we're going to be talking to, going to be looking at what's new in Windows 7 and new for Media Center, but we'll have more on that on a future show where we'll be talking to Microsoft's Charlie Owen probably next week for that one. So, it's a busy show. Let's get straight into the email. This is from Steve. Hi, Ian. I'm a long-time listener. Love the show. I've gotten a lot of good ideas from the podcast. Now I need some help from you or the listeners. Do you know where the title list for DVD libraries is stored and how to edit it? This is the problem I have created. I recently noticed that the title count in my movies and DVD library were off by 13 movies. I just installed a new drive and I'm ripping movies to it and figured that this was the problem. Although I was sure I've added it to the monitored folders in Media Center. I went back into settings and checked the drives to monitor, but now the titles are all duplicated. I tried turning off folder monitor, but it doesn't help. Any ideas you could offer would be greatly appreciated. Take care, Steve. Thanks for the email, Steve. Maybe Brian Binner up developer of My Movies could help on that one. I know Brian listens to the show. This is an interesting one. I think it's held within the Windows Media Player library, and one way is to clear out the library. And I'll try and find a link for that in the show notes, but I'm not 100% sure on that one. It certainly has worked with music in the past where I've had duplicates. It was in there. So like I said, I'll have a link for that in the show notes on how to clear out your library. I think I'm sure I've linked to that before on one of the forum posts. Over to your listeners, do you know any way where you can edit that list? Where is it cached, and can you clear it out? It would be interesting to know if there's a way of doing that. The email address for the show is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. If you can help Steve, that would be really appreciated. Steve's a regular listener, so it would be nice to help him out. Before we go into the Windows 7 news, let's just have a look at some of the news items. Engadget HD had got their hands on Embedded Automation's M-Panel. This is the 7-inch wall-mounted touch panel that you can use to control home automation. It works as a UPnP client, so you can stream music to it. It's got a built-in amp. Power over Ethernet. It's sort of Windows CE based. It's a nice unit, and I'm hoping to get one of these out to try myself. In the meantime, you can check out Ben Drawbar's review on Engadget HD, and you can also hear Ted Singh talk about M-Panel on a previous edition of the show. I think it was back in July 165. Geektonic is reporting that a recent update for Media Center, that's KB955519, could be causing problems with cable cards. Brent says this is causing a audio-only issue. Some cases broken up audio. EVH-VID is processing, maxing out the CPU, and frame skipping on playback. He says that uninstalling the update helped sort that out. So have a look at that one if you've seen those issues with cable card. I want to mention one of the new features on the updated DigitalLifestyle.com. And that is the wiki. There's so much information about Media Center out there, and a lot of great information, I should say, about Media Center out there. And I wanted to try and bring this together in one place with the rest of the content on the site, so that new users and users searching for things can find this. And I also wanted to make it so that the community can contribute it towards it. So that's the wiki. There's three areas really. There's the add-in reviews, so you can post add-in reviews. There's a download list, so this is maintaining a list of Media Center downloads with sort of only a very brief description, and you can find a wiki for that one. And there's a Windows Home Server wiki as well for stuff like that, for home server stuff. So in the Media Center wiki, there's topics like getting started guides and best practices and integration guides. And in the add-in reviews, there's things like the Remind Me for Media Center, Web Media, Heatwave, Tuner Free, MyTV, MC, Tappy Rex, Radio Time, and so on. So there's a lot of good reviews in there. And because it's a wiki, it's open to the community, you just need to be registered on the site, and then you can update the wiki. So, you know, let's pull some of this knowledge, and I think your listeners have got a really good handle on Media Center things. So go to the wiki and have a look at that, and please post your reviews. I really do want to try and get some good user reviews on there. I also want to thanks to the contributors so far: Adam Thursby, CW Kid, Simon May, and the others that have contributed on there. Chris Lanier is reporting that HP are to kill off their MediaSmart HD TV product range and focus on MediaSmart extenders. This looks real shame, because the TVs are very nice TVs with built-in extenders in them. Sadly, only available in the not available over here in the UK. So it's not something I could ever purchase, but really nice looking TVs. It says they're going to concentrate on extenders, so hopefully that will perhaps mean an expansion in HP's range of extenders, or bring them over outside the US, over to the UK. That would be nice as well. I know people are actually, you know, buying those from the States and importing them over. So no confirmation from HP as of yet, so keep an eye on the blog and the Twitter for the updates on that. Right, now to the news from the PDC. From watching the keynote, I got some information on Windows 7, and you'll find all this detailed on the blog. There's a new taskbar at the bottom, which more visual. You can drag things around. You get better thumbnails. It looks a lot nicer, actually. I like the idea of that. And kind of a docking system for docking windows around the screen, so you don't lose them. And better multi-monitor support as well. So that looks really nice. In the build that they're making available to the PDC attendees and some other people, I don't think that feature's in yet. The start panel has been improved. The search has been improved, and it's got this concept of libraries now. So you could have, say, a music library that could be made up of more than one location, kind of how Media Center can watch multiple locations. Well, this is the same thing in Explorer. So you could have a music location across two drives and across networks, I believe. So that looks interesting. And there's also this concept of a home network where you can share contents between machines. I noticed if you go into Media Center on the new machine, there's a shared tab in music, and you can share music between, like I said, between Media Center machines and old Windows 7 machines. So Media Player can play from any of the other machines if you kind of use this home network, which has got this concept of like a PIN number to get onto the home network, and then, you know, all the things like printers and shares and everything else can be all done together. So they really worked hard on getting the home network working. There seems to be a lot more options for personalizing the desktop, and the system tray has been really cleaned up and customized. There's a lot of touch improvements. They were using the HP TouchMart for the demo, I noticed, with their multi-touch, so that looks nice. I really like the TouchMart, so it'd be nice to see Windows 7 running that. And there's some new versions of the familiar Windows apps like Paint and WordPad, and the removal of other things like Photo Gallery and things like that. They've kind of been put to Windows Live, so you can get Windows Live Photo Gallery and things like that, and Windows Live Mail, rather than having them built into Windows 7. And there's been some improvements to UAC as well, so I think it's kind of less noisy. From the Media Center point of view, I think the libraries seem to be really, really nice, a way of sharing content about. And for the most Media Center information, Charlie Owen has a great post on that, and he has a good look at the new build of Windows Media Center in Windows 7. Debate on Twitter: what do we call it? Do we call it Windows Media Center in Windows 7? Do we call it Windows Media Center 7, 7MC, MC7? I'd like to hear what you think. It's going to be, take a while to get used to that one, I think. Charlie posted details of the pre-built beta, and you can see some screenshots. It looks like the UI has been improved. In the start menu is a lot nicer. Thumbnails seem to be better in the now playing. Music performance supposedly improved. And there's a kind of new details pane that appears in the middle of the screen, which looks nice. Improved ratings for rating your music. Turbo scroll, and I did see this a while ago in action. This is really nice, where you can kind of whiz through large libraries of stuff, either say on the guide or run the music. So that'll be good for people with large libraries. There's been improved picture libraries and slideshows, and like I said, shared libraries. TV feature pack is included in Windows 7, which is great news. H.264 is included on and for extenders as well, which should definitely be good. So I think the BBC HD stuff should work in there. So that is really good news. There's clickable seat bars in TV and video. Online media has been replaced with extras. There's a new text entry screen and new gadgets for Windows Media Center that were called the sidebar, but I think the sidebar's gone in Windows 7. Those gadgets can just float anywhere. So Charlie has a real good look and some good details of the features. And we'll, like I said, we'll be talking to Charlie on a future edition of the Media Center show. Charlie followed that up with some information for developers. There seems to be some sort of small improvements to the underlying platform. And if you're a developer, it's definitely worth reading Charlie's post to tell you what's changing. And I've actually got a build of Windows 7 that I'm just installing as I'm doing this week's show. So maybe next week I would have had time to play with it and give a bit more information. And like I said, I am talking to Charlie Owen on a future show. Just a quick note on the site. If you experienced any problems with the site on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, I had a problem at the ISP end with the firewall and the Microsoft ISA server, actually. So the site was up, but no one could get to it. But it all seems to be okay now, touch wood. So thanks for everybody that let me know there was a problem. And I think all the RSS feeds and everything else seems to have been sorted now as well. So thanks for everybody that let me know. Hopefully it'll be up and running now. And I really like the new sites and the community elements. So if you've not had a chance to look at the new site, please have a look on the digitallifestyle.com. Have a look at the friends area. Send me a friend request, that'd be great. There's not a lot of new blogs on there, and there's a lot of content, and like I said before, about the wiki and other stuff. Right, so now it's time for the interview, and this was the live chat with Mike Garson. Mike, Shady MG is with us from Missing Remote. So welcome back to the show, Mike.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
And it's been what seems like ages since we last talked, but we kind of, within the MVP community, we kind of keep in touch with each other, but it's been a while since you're on the show. I guess it's well over a year ago.
Yeah, it's crazy to believe that it's been that long, but yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and there's always CES. That's I think every time I mention CES, I know it, probably people get fed up with me saying, but one of the main benefit of CES is you get to meet people that you kind of only speak virtually to throughout the rest of the year.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. It was great meeting you and seeing you lugging around your heavy ass laptop.
Well, I've got the tablet PC, so I'm my bag's a lot lighter last year actually, but yeah, it's good fun.
Cool.
So what we're going to do, we've got things pretty freeform and relaxed tonight. We're going to be happy to take questions on any Media Center topics, so feel free to fire those over in the chat room, and I've got a few things I'm going to ask Mike about as well, so we're going to go through those. Like I said, today we're going to be taking a Q&A from the chat room. But first, in case anybody doesn't know who you are, just give us a background on who you are and how you became a Media Center MVP.
Okay, good idea. So my name is Mike Garson. I have been a Media Center MVP for 4 years now. I initially started with the very first version of Windows Media Center and just, you know, fell in love. I've been surrounded by home theater PCs basically since, you know, college, something like 9 years ago, just setting up, you know, a dorm PC and getting it set up with, you know, a low AMD 400 megahertz system and, you know, upgrading bit by bit. So when Media Center came out, fell in love with it, just started using it all the time, and then started getting proactive in the community. And initially it was thegreenbutton.com, and I'm a moderator over there. And then for the last couple of years, I've been posting articles and such at missingremote.com. So the two of those have kept me pretty busy in my spare time with what little spare time I have. So that's what got me in it.
So just what was the spec of your first media center machine then?
Oh God, it was terrible. It was I remember it though. I remember it was a hideous beige box that I sanded down and spray painted black myself. And then it was an AMD K62 400 megahertz.
Wow.
I remember because I worked at Best Buy back in the day, and they had like a special combo deal for employees, and that was it. So it was that system with some paltry, probably 256 megs of really expensive RAM at the time, and then my TV tuner was a good old ATI All-in-Wonder Radeon, if you remember those.
Was that the one with was so was that a built-in that was the tuner card, and was it a graphics card as well?
Yep,
Oh, that was
AGP built-in tuner and graphics beauty. And it even came with the free remote, which at the time it was like a big deal because there was no standard Media Center remote at the time. So there was no way, because Media Center didn't exist. So there was no way to control it. So the remote was great. It was actually the best thing about it because the tuner itself was pretty bad.
I guess then you must have gone down the sort MSDN route to get a hold of the media.
So my first Media Center system itself was through MSDN, yes. But before then, when I got the ATI card, it was what was I running? God, I would try any and all of the Media Center software, which we're talking about Myth TV back then. If you guys remember My HTPC, it was like the predecessor to Medio. Basically anything that was out there. I tried ATI stuff, and that was pretty terrible. But there just really wasn't anything great out then. I think Beyond TV was actually called some PVS. It was some weird name that I tried that, and it was pretty bad as well. So it's amazing for those of you that have been around for since the early days or of the late 90s. You'll remember what I'm talking about.
The thing with the first TV cards is the software was totally designed not to be on a TV, was it? It wasn't no way was any of the interfaces anything like a 10-foot interface.
Oh, exactly. Especially ATI had, with this deal with Titan TV, and it was horrific. Like, it was so small text that there's just no way you could use it from your TVs. Because mind you, this was before LCDs and plasmas. So you're talking about viewing this on a 32-inch tube with, 640 resolution. It was horrific.
Well, my first attempt was I had a TV card, and I'm forgetting even the name of it now, and that was in my piece regular PC, and I used a video sender to get that across the TV, so that was horrendous.
Oh
The
yeah.
you couldn't even read the text or anything.
It was pretty bad. I mean, even going direct though, it was still illegible.
So Richard is saying there that he's still using it. So Richard, are you still on the 2002 Media Center as well then with that?
But Richard Miller is also an MVP, so that would be inexcusable for him to be that old.
it's a real I mean, you're probably the same as me. When you first saw Media Center for the first time, going from these proprietary software, it was a major shift, wasn't it, from the clunky. I mean, I remember the Hophog TV software, the Win TV software, and it was all horrible and clunky. And then you go to the Media Center, and it was suddenly like, well, this is something I actually could use.
Yeah, I think it was really, I mean, especially for a company as big as Microsoft, I think it was really revolutionary what they did. And they were able to port it over, have an entire Media Center shell surrounded by remote control. It was great. Like before, you had some that were like maybe 50% you could use the remote, and then the other 50% you had to use your keyboard and mouse, and it was clunky. No girlfriend or wife was going to like it. But then, the Media Center itself, when it first came out, it was just so wow. It was just like they got it right. Like they got right what so many other companies had been trying to do. And I think it's in respect to them that, the Media Center world is what it is today.
I guess as the whole platform and the market is kind of matured, we've kind of really lost that wow of a new something new, because there's not a lot left to do. So things have leveled out, and it's kind of it's just it's feature updates rather than a big bang like it was back with the first media center.
Right. And I think in addition to that, where the market is, it's also where the media center team is, right? I mean, we're talking, 6 years ago, they were kind of their own little small group, I mean, it was an OEM only product SKU. It wasn't part of the main line, and the people there, they had the ability to do very unique things. And for better and for worse, they've since become a part of Vista, gained a ton more users, but now, mind you, they're under the big umbrella of Vista. So I think they've had to get a little more conservative in what they do, but still the goal is to stabilize.
And I think there's not been a lot of innovation in the area of the UI, really. I mean, you look at sort of rival platforms like the Apple TV and Sage and everything else. It's still very similar look and feel to it.
Right. Yeah. No, it's still solid.
I mean, it'd be nice to see what the team could do, given back to the sort of the free reign that they had before. But I guess that's something now they've got a mature platform they're not going to be able to do.
Yeah, I highly doubt that's going to happen, especially 'cause, it's basically the jewel of Vista, right? I mean, you get Home Premium or Ultimate, and I can't think of many other benefits in Windows Ultimate except for Media Center. So,
So moving along, so you've gone through your di different media center builds, and you became an MVP, and you're doing stuff on Mr. Remote, and some good questions in about there about TV tuner cards, that we'll come back to that, but I just thought we'll finish off a bit on you then. So what kind of stuff are you doing on Mr. Remote?
I do a combination of things. I've got my own little blog that I'm doing software plugin reviews. So I try to cover I'm trying to cover basically every Media Center plugin that's worth your time or that's clearly not worth your time. I want to review all of them. And it's just a quick, usually just a one-page review. It's a structured format so that you'll see the same structure on basically every review. And my goal is really simply, I mean, there's a very long thread on the Green Button, fantastic thread that Chris Lanier started, to cover all of the applications out there. But the problem is, a lot of these developers don't have time to make websites with screenshots, and whatnot. And then a lot of times you'll install a plugin, and then it'll either A, mess up your system, or B, it's just so horrifically awful, it's not even worth your time. So my goal is to have something easy to read, nice, have a lot of screenshots for people, just to give the bottom line, is this thing worth your time? Yes, I'd want to use it every day. No, I'd never want to use it, or every now and then. So that was my main purpose, and I think we're going on 13 strong, and one of my cohorts at Missing Remote just released a plugin for Sage TV as well, so it's not going to strictly be Media Center, but from my portion, it will be. So that was my main thing on that Life with a Plugin series.
And I suppose the plugins as with any Apple, enthusiast community, they range in quality. So you get the from the smallest single developers up to sort of the big team developers. So when you're coming across them, what have you found has been sort of the one application you thought, right, okay, the next time I do rebuild, I'm definitely putting this on?
Well, I mean, the easy one is Netflix. I mean, judging by how many people hit that review of the three Netflix plugins that are out there, I mean, clearly it's the most useful. I mean, it's amazing that three plugins came out at the exact same time for the exact same purpose, and they're all easily recommendable. That was probably the most pleasing plugin review I did, simply because I knew how much attention it would get and how much people were fiending and curious about what's the difference in the versions and which should I be using and whatnot. And each one has its pros and cons. So that's definitely one that I would install first thing, being a Netflix subscriber.
Go through some of the other one. What other one would you say? Not wanting to put you on the spot or anything, but what else would you say is kind of the ones that you like to you would install on a clean install?
Yeah, no problem. What the TV Tonic and the Olympics plugin, both the, I mean, when you install TV Tonic Olympics, you do get the regular TV Tonic as well. And for those of you that haven't tried it, it's really impressive. Like, it really makes, if you have no cable TV, no satellite, and all you did was connect Ethernet and you have TV Tonics, literally you could waste days just getting all of your video feeds that you'd want. It's awesome, especially with things like Revision 3 that are broadcasting high definition streams. I mean, literally, it's better than a lot of TV channels.
I mean, I noticed my RSS feed for the videos that I do is in there, and that's really popular. I see all the TV Tonic feeds coming through on the RSS stats, and it's a great way of getting video content onto the TV, and kind of the way it downloads, you're not kind of you're not streaming as a buffer and everything else. It kind of downloads, and then you can watch it in decent quality as well.
Exactly. Yeah, it's phenomenal, and especially with the Olympics coming out now, and the ability to, as I mentioned in the review, for those of you that have ever recorded the Olympics on your media center, one of the most annoying things is that NBC will televise the non-super popular sports. They'll televise it in 4-hour blocks, so you'll have all these are trampolining combined with skiing. With all these other things, so for them to put it like individualize your sports, it will save you so much time, and let alone hard drive space. So I'm excited for the Olympics to start, and I've already signed up for like 6 Olympic events on TV Tonic, so very excited.
Yeah, Clive was just saying in the UK we can't get that, which is a real shame. Although TV Tonic's got a lot of other stuff on there. There's no Olympic coverage on there.
Yeah, I mean that's the real downer of the plugins that come from that have content type protection stuff. You guys in the UK are normally given the cold shoulder, but hopefully they'll televise.
Yeah, it's frustrating, isn't it? Because there's plugins for say BBC i, which is the online on-demand service from the BBC, and that's something you guys can't get. So it's a shame the content providers can't kind of work out some stuff, because a lot of stuff we all want to see, good quality content.
Yeah, it's absolutely a shame. Like that, like for example, there's no reason why your popular show, The IT Crowd, there's no reason that couldn't be restreamed for if it, over to a US media center. It's just it's, you know, so
That's a great show. That's one of my favorite shows.
I love that show. I absolutely love that show. Very
Didn't they
funny
try
for
and do
those that have.
a yeah, didn't they try and do a US pilot of it, and it didn't get taken up?
Yeah, that's what I heard. I heard they were working on it, but it never got off the ground.
As I say, all the episodes are available on YouTube. I think the Channel 4 uploaded them.
It's a fantastic show. I'd imagine most of the people that are listening to this show would probably get a kick out of it. Anybody that's ever done free technical support for anybody will get a hoot out of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many little in jokes in it, right? From the Linux kernel panic at the beginning, and the Commodore 64, and there's a Commodore PET in the background, and there's so many IT in jokes in there. It's really good. It's very, very, very well written.
Very clever, very clever.
Yeah. So those are the two then that you would kind of you recommend, and of your plugins.
Yeah, those are the two. The other one I want to quickly mention,
Yeah.
just because it's the one I use the most, is MyMovies. It's made by Brian Binnerup. He's made it and managed it for, it seems like forever now, and it just keeps getting better. It's definitely for geeks. It can do anything I want, even streaming DVDs to extenders. So I mean, it is the end all be all of movie management stuff. So I just want to throw out a kudos to them, because I do use that basically on a weekly basis.
And then there's the things like the Open Media Library. It looks pretty
Oh
good.
yeah, you gotta love just the excitement that's buzzing around that. I mean, the one knock on my movies is that it hasn't changed to MCML in a long time, and the Open Media Library guys really, they all have been able to combine and collaborate in a really short amount of time. That's probably the most impressive thing, and build a really solid application that's it gives us geeks what we
So we've
want.
got some questions coming in now, and we're going to take these There's a question for you for there, but we'll go. The first question was about TV cards. So, TV cards is a huge issue when you go into media center. Obviously, it's one of the first things you have to come across. You know what TV card you're going to use, and the question was, you know, which one do you recommend? But I suppose the answer is there isn't one simple one, and it depends on what you need.
Right. There's not, it really depends what you need. I mean, you're talking if you want to get regular cable, is picture quality more important than having dual tuners? Then you're talking about, hey, what if you want ATSC high definition? Then you're talking a whole different group of tuners. And then, of course, there's, to get complete high definition through your cable, you're talking ATI's cable car tuner, but then you have to get a system that has it. Or you could go the HD home run route, but now that takes you out of media center. So it's there's so many to choose. Matt from missingremote.com actually has a guide there that covers all sorts of TV tuners, and it's like a TV tuner buying guide. So I highly recommend reading that and seeing the different tuners that are available. Hopodge is basically pretty reliable, along with AverMedia, but there's so many out there that I just encourage you all to do your homework on it and make sure that you don't have buyer's remorse when you get it in the mail and realize it's a PCI card and you want a PCIe card. So it's that's the problem when you're so popular. Back when Media Center started, there was what you want to remind me, Ian? There was like what, three tuners, all of them from Hopage, and all of them cost like $300.
There wasn't a lot of choice, and especially since the tunes are USB and PCI Express and everything else, you've got to be careful.
But I mean, there's something for everybody out there, and in every sort of price range. I mean, that's the best thing about the Media Center getting as popular. I mean, literally, the first Hopodge card that came out that was really successful was the 350 and the 250. And when those initially came out, you're talking plus $150, $200 for a tuner, which was absurd.
I mean, I've just, you may have seen from the blog, I've been testing the HP TouchSmart, and that's got a built-in tuner, but I wanted a dual tuner, so I got the Hopag PC, so USB dual tuner card, which is really nice. It's only a little small USB device. One thing I did notice, you've got to install the driver software for it to work as a dual tuner, because there's some software that you can switch into dual tuner mode. But it works really well, and I've been really impressed with how the good quality signal that gets.
It's and that's the other thing. I mean, the picture quality has improved significantly as well as the prices have gone down. It's fantastic. I mean, it's just you couldn't ask for more,
I guess the
except
thing
the
that to
cable card.
and the thing to, like you mentioned before, though, is to work out what you want. So, just for anybody that's not sure, from a UK perspective, we've got DVB-T, which is the digital terrestrial, and we've got sort of the analog signal. So you've got to pick those cards, or you do analog capture. In the US, you've got another selection of formats again, haven't you?
So the US, we have regular NTSC, which is you're straight from the wall. Then you have ATSC, which is over the air, and you can get high definition. And then in addition to that, we have satellite, which you can't do anything about right now in Media Center. And then cable card, which you can buy cable card equipped tuner system to get, and that's the only way.
And you mentioned about the PCI and the PCI Express. That's a case of just choosing, finding out what system you've got and making sure you pick the right card for that.
It still hasn't reached the point where either or makes a difference in far as performance. It's really just a preference. I mean, if you're building a new system, your motherboard probably has a PCI slot, but it'll probably have more PCI Express slots. And they're just normally smaller connectors and smaller cards in general. So it's probably best to go with that if you're building a new system. But as far as performance wise, you won't notice a difference.
And someone mentioned there about the HD Home Run. So, is there any way of getting that working with Media Center?
If there is, I have not heard about it. And I assure you, I have tried all my contacts and all my resources to try to get it working. But it's just a limitation that the tuner itself records in H.264, and that's not a supported format in Media Center.
So, some of the other questions we had in there about Media Center handling SDV and waiting on True Two Way. True Two Way is a cable card thing, isn't it?
Yeah, so True Two Way is basically the new name for Boker, which is the bidirectional cable cards. And that's basically what we're going to need in order for SDV, also known as Switch Digital Video, to work. It's a really big problem because all of the customers with cable card right now for Media Center, and essentially any cable card device not from your cable company, is gonna soon stop working with certain channels. So letters have already rolled out. I actually wrote a blog about Switch Digital Video, again at missingremote.com, and I actually got my hands on a letter from Time Warner in San Diego, and they're talking their first initial rollout is going to be 44 digital channels that are going to be switched over to Switch Digital. One of the channels is ESPN News, which I'm shocked that they said was a because their main goal is to transport the low priority channels first and then gradually migrate everybody else, all the other channels. But you know, if so, if you're in San Diego with Time Warner, you probably got this letter if you have cable car, and you're soon going to not be able to tune those channels. So it's a very big deal.
So does that mean that there has to be an update on the tuner card software, so on the ATA, or is it like a hardware thing?
It's probably a combination of both. To my knowledge, and from what I'm informed about the tuners, the current ATI tuner is a one-way only. It can only support read-only of the tuners, so it's only one way. So it's not. I don't know if there's going to be a firmware that will enable it. If I had to give you my own personal opinion, I don't think that it will be a firmware upgrade. I think that it will just be new tuners. Now, users that have cable card aren't completely left in the dark. There is going to be a tuning adapter. You've probably seen some posts on Engadget about them. I think Scientific Atlanta and Motorola are working on tuning adapters. But those will be provided probably through your cable company. And as of right now, nobody's been able to test one, and your cable companies do not have an estimated date on when those will be available. So until those come out, you will not be able to get your channels.
And this is just another thing that's going to put people off cable card, isn't it? I suppose that's the idea, I guess.
Yeah, it's such a shame. It's just another black eye for cable card, and such a shame because those of you with cable card, I'm sure will attest that the cable card Media Center experience is as good as it gets. Like it is so much better than anything you can get from your cable company, from any other software that there is. It is such a seamless and high definition experience. Like it's phenomenal. And it's a shame that it has had so many issues, and this is yet another issue that's happening. And my main frustration with it is, it could have been prevented. I'm sure if there were higher dollar figures associated with cable card users, or more visibility, that this would have been taken care of. But I mean, the fact is, cable cards simply don't get that much attention because they still continue to have issues with installation and whatnot. Like, I mean, people that have bought the Dell have been frustrated just to try to find the link on where to buy that Dell. So the marketing isn't there to support it. So I think there's just not enough attention. I compare it to when the first version of Extenders came out, and there was no DivX or Xvid support for the files. Nothing was done because there simply weren't that many V1 Extender customers out there. As soon as Xbox 360 came out, I mean, it was literally, I think, what was it? You probably remember, Ian, like 2 weeks before Transcode 360 came out.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And that answered everybody's prayers since the first Extenders and solved everything because now you have that whole community of all these Xbox 360 users, which is huge, to invest in it. And, gradually, as more and more people have Xbox 360s and are using them as extenders, and now the regular extenders are coming with DivX and Xvid support out of the box.
Yeah, it's great. You've got the demand's got to be there for for the feat, you know, for everybody to put the features in there. But I guess the demand's not going to be there while they're kind of putting these roadblocks in the way.
Right, right. It's another example, and it's a real frustrating part for me being an early adopter, but it's another example of how early adopters sometimes and often get left in the dark.
I mean, just saying there in the chat room about the TiVo, if TiVo can make a tune adapter for USB, then, you know, there's any chance that Vista Media Center should be able to do the same. But I guess it's ATI and Microsoft all working, and the cable companies working together to fix it.
Yeah, and I mean, so I would imagine, I mean, from what I'm informed about, there's going to be the same tuning adapters. So anything that works on the TiVo should theoretically be able to be supported on your PC, and it's just a matter of time. But I mean, the main problem right now is nobody has these tuning adapters. Nobody has a date for these tuning adapters. So even TiVo, they could say, yeah, we're working with them, it's going to work, but they haven't been able to give any of their customers tuning adapters either. So it's not like, I mean, TiVo's been a lot more public about the issue because, mind you, that's all they do is TV. So Microsoft, I wish they would come out publicly and say, hey, we are working with the cable company, whatever. I'm sure they are. You know, there's no doubt in my mind that they are working to resolve the issue, but they're just not as public a company as TiVo is in far as you know, unreleased products like that.
Listen, you want these features in there so that people could commit to the platform if they know that, you know, future changes are going to be supported by a Media Center, that they can go with it now, and, you know, and they're not going to have to bin all their equipment or software at a later date.
Right, and especially when it's as expensive an equipment as a TiVo enabled, or sorry, a cable card enabled system. I mean, remember, you have to buy a pre-configured cable card authorized computer to enable the whole thing. So I mean, you're talking $1,000 plus, and now you're talking about having to have headaches that you wouldn't have had if you just stuck to NTSC.
Yeah, it's a real shame. It just needs that push. I mean, it's a bit like for the UK, we you know, it needs true Sky Media Center integration, and whether that comes in a future version of Media Center, I really don't know. But it's what it really needs for the platform to take off, because it's a significant part of the market, and it's something that I think perhaps puts people off the fact that even if they haven't got Sky now, they may be considering it in the future and wouldn't want to use Media Center if it's not compatible.
Absolutely.
So one thing you mentioned there about extenders, and probably since when we last talked, certainly I don't think there were many extenders out there, probably just the Xbox 360. So how have you seen the market and the enthusiasts taking to the extenders?
So it really is varied. Like I've reviewed several extenders myself, and I've played physically with basically everyone out there. And I'm getting impressed on where it's going. I think that it still faces a slight hiccup simply due to the fact that, hey, still today, the Xbox 360 is the best experience. But I mean, for the community, I think they're accepting it. They like all the different options that there are. They like all the different codecs that are supported. You know, for the people that are price sensitive, you know, Linksys makes a very affordable one. You can get an Xbox 360 very affordable, although it's slightly louder. And then, you know, HP has a fantastic Media Center Connect that you know, is as close to the 360 as I've seen. So it's really, it's gotten much better. And you gotta give credit to the companies for continuing to have faith in the extender brand and delivering a quality product. So I give them kudos there.
I mean, there is quite a range, and I like you mentioned, you can get really the lower cost, say the Netgear or the Linksys one. So the Linksys, the basic one is very basic, but it works well. And the HP one's kind of a premium one that's got sort of a lot of extra functions. And it's interesting to see what they've been doing with their own user interface and adding features to that as well, you know, so that you can combine media from multiple sources.
Right. I think that's the part I didn't expect, was companies taking an aggressive approach on their own value add. So in addition to the standard Media Center extender platform, which they have to work with, you know, they're also leveraging the hardware and their own technologies and making a very viable software solution as well. So, you know, for me personally, I have several systems in the house, and I still have my Kinect in the house. And if all I want to do is play music, I'm not even going to take the 20. I mean, it's literally only 10 seconds more to get into Media Center, but it's 10 seconds less for me to just use the Media Center Connect. I'll simply go in there and play whatever track I'm looking for.
I mean, I think there's still some things like choose, like going through video and things, which are a bit slow, I found on the in HP software, the Media Center. But it's a step in the right direction, and it's good to see some innovation around these boxes, so they're not just, they're not all the same.
Yeah, absolutely. The video thumbnails still have some work to do, but you got to give them credit the fact that hey, this is the type of box that if you wanted to keep your media center off but still be able to play back content from another system in your house, it would be really easy to do. Whereas on a media center extender, if that media center is off, that will not work.
And it's good to have. I like the fact it's got pool content, so that my wife's got a lot of her music on her laptop, and it sees that, and she can listen to that through it. And whereas my music's on the Media Center PC, so it gives you sort of the option to use both.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's some comments in there about the Linksys ones. I was pretty happy when I had the Linksys one on test. The 2100 and the 2200, they were basic, but they did the job pretty well. And okay, the UI was a bit sluggy compared to the 360, but once you were you've gone through the guide, found the recorded TV, and started, you press play on the remote, it's off, and it works fine.
Yeah, and for those, I mean, Dell has been having some crazy sales on those Linksys devices, going, I think, as low as, I want to say, I think it was $150, which is, I mean, just a steal. So, I mean, that's kudos to them, and kudos to Linksys for dropping the price and just making a killer deal for people.
I mean, that's the nice thing about the Linksys ones, is that they really are a low cost way of bringing TV into another room. And I've mentioned this before, but the getting a DVB-T signal in the house is hard work. So you've got a decent aerial on the roof, and you want to distribute that around the home. So using a Linksys one as a media center extender is, and using a wireless network, is a very easy way of putting TV in a room that's got no aerial signal.
Right. They're just, I mean, the idea, the concept, it's fantastic. And the only thing I would love, and really I think a lot of our users would pay to have, is an integrated Blu-ray drive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you use it, the HP Connect one, you can see straight away how a Blu-ray drive in that would make it an ultimate extender.
Absolutely.
We mentioned in the chat room there about the chipsets, and I think the media center, from what I understand, I think the media center bit is on one chip, and then the rest of it is on their own devices. So I wouldn't say the Linksys are going to get their own, nice smooth user interface. They'll just get their basic update. But then if there's a change to Media Center UI, then that will get reflected across all the platforms.
I think you're right. From my understanding, they are all using the same Sigma chip. And I mean, I've tried getting the information out of HP on how they did it. Because anybody that's used the HP can see, it's still not, full 3D like a 360, but it's very impressive when you compare it to the Linksys, and how the Linksys and the D-Link, they're, I mean, it's a really 2D looking menu interface. How HP was able to do it, I'm not sure. I have no idea, but I love it.
Yeah, it is very nice. So your ideal extender then would be something with a Blu-ray drive on as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if for anybody that hasn't, I mean, a Blu-ray picture is absolutely gorgeous. And that's the one limitation on the extenders, is in addition to regular DVDs. I mean, I have a fairly hefty collection of DVDs, and that's the one limitation on extenders, is I can't just take, my DVD into my bedroom and pop it in and play it. So it kind of limits what I'm able to watch. And I know the Linksys has one, with the 2200 has a DVD player, but Blu-ray's where the future is. So I would love to see one come out with that.
I think that probably the only thing that would tempt me at the moment anyway to go Blu-ray. I just don't feel the need to go for one. But then if there was a nice extender that came out a bit like the HP one with a Blu-ray, then I would definitely consider that.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, like, to invest in a Blu-ray drive for your home PC and buy all these drives, or buy all these movies, which aren't exactly cheap, and then to be limited to only play it in the main area, it's kind of sucks.
So here's a question for you from Barry. Does Mike think that regional UK features like licensed and multiple EPGs, multiple tuners, HD, DVB, S2, etc., will always lag behind due to the massive audience Microsoft needs to cater for the size of the Vista Media Center development team?
Oh, wow. You're probably more adverse to answer this one than myself, Ian.
Well, I think from they do have a regional development center in Ireland where future media center components around the TV side of it for Europe are being developed. So I think that the team has been expanded. So whatever you see in the future version of media center, certainly for say DVB-T, will have come from the European team as well as the team in Redmond.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's again a matter of time and popularity. I think, it UK hasn't, jumped on board Media Center as fast as the US and Canadian off has, and but I mean, they're trying. Like I remember, God, it's got to be a couple of years now when Jessica was flying to Germany. Jessica's on from formerly home team. She was flying to Germany to talk with the team there and discuss how to handle all the different tuners and whatnot. So there's definitely a focus and an effort there. It's just a matter of time, really, and resources.
Well, it's not that long since Media Centres, if was only just officially supported in the UK until the, I say it's the 2005 version, wasn't it? That before then it was US only.
Right. And it's just a simply, I mean, there's so many different formats out there that, I mean, you gotta, I commend them for not trying to bite off more than they could chew.
I mean, like you said, there's different standards in Australia and Japan and Brazil and I think I even got an interview cut up with someone from Ecuador. They're all different standards.
Right. It's a very frustrating thing. And I think this is where Microsoft should really start, appreciating, not IPTV necessarily that you have to go through your cable provider, but something, like TV Tonic, internet type television features and abilities. How about an integrated, work with TV Tonic and make an integrated RSS vidcast that you can, that it'll be more seamless.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was one of the things I put on my post a couple of weeks ago when I put about, that Media Center needs integrating with the rest of, the ecosystem, is that all the video content that Microsoft puts out, virtually none of it, a small set of it, is available on Media Center. So it should be the natural way to consume, Microsoft's video outputs, all the Channel 9 videos and the Channel 10 and the training videos. It should all be on a guide in Media Center.
Absolutely. I could not agree with you more, and it's something that I've personally requested from the Microsoft team. So hopefully it'll happen, and I think it's going to go there because, I mean, I can't imagine how frustrating it is for you to keep reading my blog about all these cool things that you don't have access to.
So I think it was about we were just saying about the TV functions for the regional, the countries, the different countries offering the different formats for the different countries. And that you were saying that Microsoft do pay attention because they've been sending people around the world trying to look at different formats.
Yeah, and I mean it's really there's just so many different formats out there that they're trying, but I mean you got to really target because I mean there I think there's nothing more frustrating than seeing a company try to handle 5,000 different formats and not do any of them well. So I got to give them kudos for staying focused. On US, Canada for starters, initially, make sure they had that pretty tight down. And then they've since expanded out to UK, Europe, and other Japan regions. And they're taking it step by step. And while I understand it's frustrating, I would be extremely frustrated too. But I think in the end, when you get things up and going and you get to par on par with features, you're going to be happier because it'll be a much more pleasant experience. But as I was mentioning to Ian, I think the way that they should be going is the route of internet streaming, enabling Media Center itself to be more of what TV Tonic can provide. I mean, you're talking internet TV channels with the click of a button. And the beauty of TV Tonic, I believe, is other than the Olympics, is you can get that anywhere in the world. Is that right, Ian?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So I think that's a way that they can help users that are frustrated by their local limitations on content, getting frustrated looking at my blog and seeing all the online spotlight applications that you UK users can't use. But then, hey, here's a plethora of other awesome quality programming that's available to anyone in the world, even if you don't have a TV tuner at all. So I think that's the way that it should go, and I think that's the way the community is hopefully going to, really embrace.
I mean that's what we were saying, that we really, when with Microsoft got so much video content of their own that really all that should be integrated to Media Center, so that's the natural place to go. So you want to look at training videos or Channel 9 videos or on 10 videos, they're all there in Media Center. They're just IP, so it's available no matter where you are, so there's no regional limitations on that.
Absolutely. And I think Microsoft acknowledges that with, I mean, they released Internet TV beta. And I think that was a step in the right direction as well. Again, it's another one of them taking small steps instead of a giant leap, but testing the waters, seeing what feedback they get. I think anybody that's played with Internet TV probably likes the interface and what it provides. Quality of video is pretty bad, but it's getting better. And I think it's a good start. And it shows that, I mean, what's most important to me is that it shows that the Microsoft eHome team are concerned about this and they are taking it into account.
You can see in the future that it's going to be the way that we're going to consume content. Expense broadcast is expensive and cable is expensive, but internet delivery is relatively inexpensive for the market you can reach. So I think we're going to see more content coming that way.
Right. I agree. I hope so.
And just to further answer that question from Barry, there is a European development team that works out of Ireland from Microsoft that work on things like UK TV standards and German standards and everything else, so that future versions of Media Center are going to see the sort of the fruits of their work. So better European support that's come directly from Europe and from the development team in Ireland.
Yeah, I think that'll be key as well.
What other areas do you think that you with Media Center you wanted to, you can see the potential, and you think that it's going forward, it's where it needs to be. So you can mention like internet TV. What else do you see going forward that we're going to need?
Wow, that's a good one. I would love to.
Not to put you on the
No,
spot
no,
or anything.
no. Going back to my Blu-ray topic is, I think integrated Blu-ray playback. For any of you that have Blu-ray drives, I'm sure you feel my frustration with having to use a third party software. And due to the way that the content protection of Blu-ray, they're not able to be MCML apps. So even the third-party apps aren't actually even integrated into Media Center. The two solutions are CyberLink's PowerDVD Ultra, and then ArcSoft's Total Media Theater, as one of our users had just commented on. I would agree that ArcSoft is probably ahead of its class. But the fact still remains that the application does have to minimize Media Center and then launch its own application. And they've done a great job, and I've actually worked with them personally on improving how that works in Media Center integration. And I think it's pretty awesome how well it works. But again, I think in order for Blu-ray, I mean, Blu-ray is, still a new technology, and you're still going to have people timid about it. I think still it would be nicer if it was integrated. I mean, there still are some issues with it every now and then that you'll run into. CyberLinks, I mean, heck, you got to use a guide that we that a user came up with for to make it work from the 10 foot. So hopefully it'll happen. But hopefully it'll happen in time. Microsoft will work with ArcSoft and CyberLink to get an integrated player, or at least allow them to create inside the Media Center shell. I think that's what it will need to happen. If you read Chris Lanier's blog, he's not as big a believer as I am on that, strictly due to the Java requirements that are needed for Blu-ray. But time will tell, and hopefully it will happen.
Yeah, because at the moment, I think the ArcSoft one from when I saw it at CS is a much neater solution than I'd seen anything else so far. I've used the Sony's solution on one of their machines, and I saw the HP one on the Dragon, and it's very disconnected. And this particular Sony one, from actually putting a DVD in the Media Center UI for it to actually start playing, there was a considerable wait and flicking of screens backwards and forwards. The HP Dragon machine did seem better, but still, it's not that kind of smooth playback that you get with a regular DVD.
Right, it's the type of thing that you and me and probably everybody in the forums as geeks, and I'm speaking on behalf of all of us geeks, we could probably live with it, and we'll say, oh yeah, it's just 20 seconds to start a movie, not a huge deal. But I mean, yeah, great point. It is like the original days of DVD playback, and it's the type of thing where, hey, if you go and you buy a Blu-ray drive, I mean, heck, even a PS3. You don't have to wait as long to do it. I mean, you just pop in the disc, you play it, and it's great. And I think it's the type of thing that does scare off non-PC users. I mean, and the main goal of Media Center is, hey, Media Center is not a computer. It's an appliance, right? It goes in your living room. You don't touch it with a keyboard and mouse. You just use your remote. And I think little lags and delays like that do scare off people, and not scare them off, but it definitely isn't as attractive as a seamless experience.
I guess that's where something like a Blu-ray equipped extender would work quite well, because it could just flick to the firmware extender playback, and that would be much smoother than probably the PC based solution.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at that point, you might even consider just using an extenders only. And never actually using the server itself, just using it as a headless server.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I've been doing for some time now, where I've still got a monitor on it, but it's not connected up to my TV. And I've not had my PC connected up to the TV for, a couple of years now since I got the 360 reel.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, that's a good way for stability as well, right? I mean, I bet your server crashes hardly ever now.
Yeah, it's much more stable, and I don't put a lot of applications on there. It just kind of does that one role, and the cleaner you keep it, the much more stable it goes.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we were going to talk about tonight, but we won't, was the whole thing of connecting up TVs to PCs and HDMI. And I get you've had a lot of experience with that, so perhaps that we'll touch on that on a future show.
Yeah, absolutely. I think HDMI is it's complicated and it's tricky and it's confusing a lot of people. But in the end result is going to be, high fidelity audio and high quality video. It's just a matter of time. So stay tuned for missingremote.com. We should have some stuff on there at some point shortly, either by myself or probably Matt Wright, who's our local video and audio fanatic. So it's something that's very close to my heart, and it's something that I want to be good. So stay tuned, and hopefully, if you got any questions, feel free to post in any of the forums.
Yeah, we'll definitely do. We'll set up another show, and we'll get you on that, because it's a topic that we could talk about for quite some time, because it's just not as simple as you'd expect it to be.
Right. And that's one of the frustrating points, but I think at the end of the, not the day, but at the end of whenever the technology stops evolving or finally becomes settled, I think it will all make sense. But right now, as it is changing, and computer technology trying to catch up with AV technology, there is a slight disconnect. So I think HDMI is good. It just, it's had stumbling blocks, And fortunately, when HTPCs are trying to, home theater PCs are trying to gain that ground still as being, your one and only box in the house. It's hiccups like that and hiccups like cable card, which unfortunately do more damage than good.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, it's been great talking to you tonight. I've really enjoyed it, and thanks to everybody in the chat room. I really like doing these live streams, because the questions are always much better than I can think of.
Yeah, no, it was definitely fun. Thanks for having me. Thanks everybody for tuning in and asking and participating. I mean, this was it was fun getting live questions and answering. I would love to do a whole audio chat too, where people could participate.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. I think with Skype we should be able to do that. So maybe next time we'll do HDMI and a bit of live audio as well.
Yeah, I would love to. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks to Mike. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/isdixon. My email address is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. I'm going to go and play Windows 7 now, and I'll speak to you next week. Bye.